United States v. Strong. Mr. Cohen.
It's a gut pleasure, Your
Honor. Always is.
The issue in this case is whether a court in sentencing of the defendant consider as affecting what his criminal guideline sentences, convictions, offenses, whatever we want to call them, that really do not involve criminality. In this case, the court, over objection, considered driving on a suspended license from the state of Illinois, where the defendant receives supervision. And why that's absurd to continue as criminality is because in the state of Illinois, that's an absolute liability offense. If somebody suspends your license and you don't receive notice, they send notice to the wrong address, whatever they do, you have no notice that your license has been suspended, and you drive and you get stopped, it's irrelevant that you had no notice.
But Mr. Cohen, I mean, you haven't disputed that these prior offenses fall within the language of the guidelines. They do fall under subpart C. And it sounds to me like cutting through all the rhetoric, what you're really saying is that this defendant's criminal history overstated his dangerousness, and thus the district court should have given him a downward departure, but we can't review that.
It sounds like that, but it's not, because the district court shouldn't consider it at all.
But
if it's not an offense that in any way can relate to criminality. For instance, let's say you had parking tickets, and the only evidence was that it was your car, not that you parked it. That's an absolute offense. Makes no difference if you came into court and said, Your Honor, that car was, you know, that you could prove it was stolen, or my wife had it, or somebody else had it. I was in the hospital. I was arguing in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. Makes no difference.
But your argument then would be that all absolute liability offenses should fall outside the scope of the guidelines. I just don't see that that's where the commission went when it wrote the guidelines.
The commission's wrong. The commission was...
But that's what they did.
Well, you know, I understand what that's what they did, but the commission was written by many people who had absolutely no practicality in the criminal justice area and what it's involved with. And I think this court can't stand by and let such absurd rules control and give it, especially at the level of 38 where my client is, there's a substantial difference in sentence. And the other issue...
Why is there such a substantial difference?
Well,
he's in criminal history category 2, which I think you concede that's where argue that's where he should be.
Correct.
This sentence falls right in the middle of Category 2, the one he actually received.
Yes, but there's no showing that the judge would have given him in the middle of Category 2, since the judge here gave him just 2 months over the minimum of Category 3.
Yeah, but if the judge didn't give him the minimum of Category 3, what makes you think he
would
have
gotten anything better? Well, if the judge did the equivalent and gave him the minimum of Category 2 plus 2 months, that's a substantial lesser sentence than he received here. And that's why...
If a chicken had lips that could whistle...
Right. And if these offenses were not that type of offense, wouldn't be inappropriate. I lost my train for a second. You can't assume, and you shouldn't assume, that the judge would have given the same sentence if he found legally he was in Category 2. This is what the government argues, but you can't incarcerate a person for an extra 3-4 years, which is the situation in this case, based on such a slim assertion. And the other aspect to these cases is the marijuana cases, which he got the points on, of cases which all involved, if you look at the facts of the record, was basically one marijuana cigarette, and cases which, though we couldn't, under the Supreme Court opinion, attack the validity of the conviction, but the evidence is, and the affidavits is, and what we asserted as evidence, is if a defendant came to court and his lawyer told him in the state of Illinois, it's not a conviction, it's nothing, the supervision, it can't hurt you anymore, it can't have any effect. But why hang it, you know... I'd ask this court to go down to some of these drug courtrooms where you may have to wait, if you're going to have a trial, you may have to wait a half a day, And your lawyer says, why don't we just get rid of it? Walk up there, get supervision, it'll have no effect, we'll throw it out. After, you know, you do a year or something, supervision, can't hurt you, can't be used if it's thrown out. Why not? Now, we couldn't demonstrate that to assert it because the U.S. Supreme Court has cut off our ability to assert that the conviction is invalid unless there was no lawyer at all. But when a lawyer tells you that and then you're beaten to death with it, something's actually wrong. It's foul. You know, the president yesterday talked about fighting the terrorists. Well, incarceration of our citizens, even though they're bad men, drug dealers, on such slimsy type of activity, is just as bad as anything the terrorists are doing. I mean, in this situation, these matters shouldn't be considered because they don't really deal with criminality. And the terrible thing is, if the supervision, instead of being for 365 days, was 364 days, if a lawyer who got the supervision had thought ahead about the possible federal consequences, wouldn't count. So we give my client the extra time because in getting the supervision, his lawyer didn't say, make it 360 days. Wouldn't count under the guidelines at all. And that's what's wrong with his situation. And the government's going to stand up here and say, waiver, you can't raise this on appeal. And in the cases I've cited where the plea agreement is ambiguous and unclear, it's not waived. And that is the situation in this case. And the provisions of the plea agreement in this case, when dealing with waiver and things on appeal, read in part, says, defendant knowingly waives the right to appeal any sentence when the maximum provided in the statute of conviction or manner in which the sentence was determined on the ground set forth in section 3742 or any ground whatsoever except for the court's determination regarding application of U.S. 3B1 and defendant's criminal history category. Would a citizen think that maybe that gives you the right to appeal that? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. McKenzie?
Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Cohen is correct in one sense that I am going to say that he has waived the issue.
But, the problem with that argument is that you did not write into that section of the plea agreement the qualifications that you are trying to import elsewhere. It says he can appeal his criminal history category. That's what he's appealing. And it seems to me our line of cases construing waivers very strictly, in which we've held, among other things, that if you don't mention restitution, you can still appeal restitution. We read waivers very strictly, and trying to import things from a paragraph here and a paragraph there elsewhere in the plea agreement to say, well, it's only these criminal history complaints seems to me to go against the plain language of this part of the agreement. If you had wanted to say that, you should have said it there.
Your Honor, in order to look at the waiver, you have to look both at the waiver itself and the colloquy.
Well, but you see, that's external evidence. The plea agreement is a contract, and if we're going to open up the plea agreement to all manner of extrinsic evidence, I'm not sure that's the road the government wants to go down. A lot of people have extrinsic evidence they'd love to bring in. The prosecutor really promised me this, somebody really said that. It seems like a bad path.
Well, even setting aside the colloquy, the plea agreement has to be considered as a whole. And when you consider all of the parts of the plea agreement as a whole, you can see exactly what they're talking about.
They give some examples, but they don't limit it in this section. They just say he can appeal his criminal history category. I don't know why you're worrying about it so much, because what happens once we get to the merits of this appeal?
Well, as the court noted, the appeal really isn't about due process or constitutional issues. The appeal really is, I should have gotten downward departure, and I didn't. The district court judge, Judge Reinhardt, found that he had specifically waived his right to make a downward departure.
That's the paragraph 18 point, right?
And then he went and said, but even if you didn't, I'm going to consider this. Mm-hmm. And he considered it, and he found that his prior convictions weren't just parking tickets. It was unlawful use of weapons. It included a prior conviction for possession of cocaine with intent to deliver. And these are serious offenses. In fact, there were 7 convictions, only 4 of which were counted because of the guidelines. He then found that he had actually been conducting this conspiracy, and it was a large-scale conspiracy, and he was a leader of the conspiracy while he was on a criminal justice sentence. So the judge really was within his discretion to decline to depart downward. His criminal history did not overstate the seriousness of his past.
Although 4A1.1C is the category of the guidelines that deals with these extremely minor offenses, that's why there's a cap of 4 points.
That's right, Your Honor. And there's also exactly what the defendant asked for, which is an ability to have a district court judge view it and, in his discretion, determine whether it does overstate the seriousness of the offense. And that decision is unreviewable by this court. Judge Reinhart carefully considered it. He discussed the factors, discussed the sentence, and came to the conclusion that it didn't overstate it. Your Honor, the United States respectfully asks that you dismiss this appeal for lack of jurisdiction or the alternative to affirm this judgment and sentence.
You have anything to add, Mr. Cohen?
Yes.
It's not merely that Judge Reinhart considered it. The issue is he should be prohibited from considering. These are the type of convictions, especially where the lawyer said that it doesn't mean anything, and where the conviction is for an absolute offense and for one marijuana cigarette. It just doesn't show criminality. It's not that Judge Reinhart can say, well, it doesn't show that much. It doesn't show criminality that can be considered at all. If the guideline said we could consider a factor that the defendant's a fat man and he's been told to lose weight and he doesn't, you can't consider it. And you can't consider this type of finding, especially where the lawyer says to him it doesn't make any difference, will have no effect, in affecting criminality. So Reinhart is prohibited from considering, and that's what's wrong here. And he did consider it. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Case will be taken under advisement.